ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Main engine start.
I remember the day so clearly.
One liftoff.
Roger, Challenger. Obviously a major malfunction.
I ran outside as fast as I could and looked up in the sky.
Couldn't believe it. It had exploded.
I'm science reporter Fiona Pepper.
And I'm Dr. Carl.
We're going to tell you the story of Challenger.
Challenger Legacy. Search for Science Friction wherever you get your podcasts.
Or on the ABC Listen app.
So Priya, have you had many patients? I mean, it used to be said that GPs used to dread patients coming in with reams and reams of Dr. Google searches. Have you had many people coming in with AI searches?
I have now, and I feel like it's a completely different entity to Dr. Google because people are getting quite specific advice from these AI systems.
The question is just how safe they are.
Have you used it? Have you used any of them?
No, I meant to try one, but I haven't done it. I don't trust AI. So
neither, yeah.
You know, give them something and they take it away. I have used, I must say, what I have used is AI for literature searches. So in other words, instead of Google Scholar, I use some AI proprietary programs and with mixed results. Even them, I don't trust in terms of their summaries. It's a problem.
Despite our decades between us, you and I are on the same page on this one.
My God.
I'm also very nervous to plug in my data. I don't know where it goes. And we did do a call out for people's experiences with AI when it comes to their health concerns, their questions. And people have written in. There's a huge number of emails and some people are really loving it. Some people find that there are potentially some traps and you have to ask the right question of the AI. But it is being widely used and I think ChatGPT Health is certainly going to make it more widespread.
And we'll be covering more of that on today's Health Report.
I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
And I'm Norman Swan on Gadigal Land. On this AI in Health, we talked to one of the leading experts in AI in healthcare in Australia, Professor Enrico Cuera. And here's one of the things that he said.
What they say in Silicon Valley is move fast and break things. And the problem is things in healthcare are people.
That was a big sigh there, Priya.
I know. It's something I'm very nervous about and I'm worried about patients and what's going to happen here.
Just hold your horses and listen to Enrico. Mind, I'm not sure that you're going to have your mind settled when you do hear Enrico, but that's not all we've got on today's show.
No, so we're talking about medical abortion, which in Australia is currently capped at 9 weeks of gestation, but new research suggests it could be an option for women much later in pregnancy.
And we launch a defence of the fat cell. People are having liposuction all over the place, or used to be having liposuction before GLP-1s, but the fat cell might be worth having.
In the news this week, the Minister for Health, Mark Butler, has announced that there's going to be the development of a national medicines record. So essentially all scripts that are dispensed, prescribed, are going to go into a national database, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, this stems from problems with telehealth providers, where you phone up your doctor or make an appointment and you say what's wrong with you and they give you a script without seeing you.
Yes, so online services where there's been acknowledgement with this announcement that there has been a disconnect in the care of patients. So either regular GP will see patients and they will actually sometimes tell me, Norman, that maybe they're taking some form of medicinal cannabis or a GLP-1. Those are the two that I'm commonly seeing. And if the patient tells me amazing, if they don't, then I am not aware of it and it can cause problems and interactions with other medicines and other treatment.
And this all stems from the advocacy of one mother whose daughter died from a medicines overdose, from doctor shopping through these digital health providers.
Yes, and she stockpiled medications and tragically did overdose, which was preventable.
Two things that confuse me about this, but you as a practicing GP can probably fix me up, is first of all, my health record stores the prescribing records that, you know, if you prescribe something, it automatically goes into my health record. And also, there's a national system for controlled medications like narcotics, isn't there, where there's a flag?
So that's a two-part question, I feel.
Okay.
Dr. Norman Swan.
And here's your starter for five. Answer the first part.
The My Health record is often incomplete, and it depends on whether or not practitioners actually upload information to it. So it's dependent on that. It doesn't always happen automatically. The second is that,
you've got to actively look for it.
You do. And often I go in there and, Norman, it's incomplete. So it's actually unhelpful and sometimes confusing. The real-time prescribing does exist for certain medications. So if I'm prescribing medication for ADHD or a benzodiazepine, certain regulated medications, I can log on to in Victoria, it's called SafeScript, and I can see who's prescribed and who has dispensed the medications. And it's only for a very limited number of medications. And I think expanding that to everything to avoid this kind of interactions or people potentially overdosing, which is preventable, is going to be really quite a powerful thing.
And initially it's going to be for these telehealth providers.
Yes, they will be enforced to upload. And actually the interesting thing is not just the medication, but the context, the reason for the medication being prescribed. It's one thing to just see the medication, but to actually know what the clinical indication is also really important.
And good news on the uptake of the shingles vaccine.
Yes, so people will remember that in November 2023, before my time with you, Norman, there was a different shingles vaccine.
Before
that was
which time? Or your health report
we
time?
Were, before we were together before on we the health report.
We were a thing.
Yes. There used to be a vaccine called Zostavax. That was the live shingles vaccine, which we couldn't use in immunocompromised people.
And it wasn't very effective anyway.
Yes, and then it got replaced with Shingrix, which is what is currently on the schedule. You get two doses. It's not live. We can use it in immunocompromised patients. And also,
the age has gone down.
And it's much more effective. But they've just released data on the uptake of it, which is good news.
A third of the program's eligible adults, that's people aged over 65, 65 or over, have received at least one Shingrix dose. But it's really not evenly spread across Australia or even by gender. So women are taking up more than men, you know, and there are regional differences.
And I think it's also important to note that nearly 88% of those who started the course went on to complete the second dose, which is they have that two dose level of protection. And you're right, there is still discrepancies in terms of who's able to access it. But this is just a nice reminder for people. Shingles is very unpleasant. You can develop a condition called post-herpetic neuralgia with chronic pain. It can be quite debilitating. So if you're over 65, if you're Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander 50 and over, or you're immunocompromised and over 18, go and chat to a health professional.
And you've got the added benefit of 17 to 20% reduction in the incidence of dementia.
Yes. We love going on about that.
We do.
Should we do it again? It could be due to the adjuvant. It could be due to preventing infection.
Well, it happens with influenza vaccine and it probably happens with pneumococcal vaccine too. Something about getting vaccinated protects your brain.
It's the way to go.
And just a follow up to, we had a conversation last week about cannabis. A big review of cannabis, you know, in various forms to treat chronic pain. And what it showed was, whether it's THC, CBD, or a mix of THC and CBD, there's no evidence that it produces anything greater than a 50% reduction in pain relief, which is considered the minimum required for significance.
And the authors did acknowledge that the studies that existed, that exist, I guess, in this space, are really quite small. Some of them are biased, and that really there need to be larger studies and randomised controlled trials in this area. But yeah, for the moment, very limited, if not lack of evidence.
And importantly, the other thing, that there's a serious lack of evidence about the side effects. And it must be said that you and I are not necessarily popular when it comes to talking about cannabis.
No. So we did do a post on ABC Radio National on Instagram. You and I occasionally appear on there.
Mm.
And, you know, I still consider myself quite cool and open-minded, but people, you know, I think at the end of the day, we are here to dissect the evidence and give people reliable information. And unfortunately, in this space, like you do you, we're just here to help people make informed decisions, are we not, Norman?
We are. We don't have to be super cool.
No, but you also don't have to listen to us if you don't want to.
No, maybe you can listen to us because you're taking too much THC. I mean, who knows? You just don't drive.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.